This is People Magazine for the week of October 21st, 2019. On the cover of this week's People, Oprah, the 5 moments that changed my life. Plus more amazing women making an impact, and they're all part of People's Women Changing the World issue that this issue is. But first, let's get the scoop about Harry's fight to protect Meghan. Prince Harry has a new mission, taking on the British tabloid press on behalf of his wife, Meghan Markle. The new dad, aged 35, shocked royal insiders on the last evening of the couple's tour of South Africa with an October 1st statement slamming those in the UK press who have waged what he calls a ruthless campaign against Meghan that escalated throughout her pregnancy and while raising our newborn son, 5-month-old Archie. Evoking the 1997 death of his mom, Princess Diana, he wrote, "I lost my mother, and now I watch my wife falling victim to the same powerful forces." The statement coincided with a lawsuit filed by Meghan, age 38, against the Mail on Sunday over a publication of a letter she wrote to her father, Thomas Markle. The contents of a private letter were published unlawfully in an intentionally destructive manner, Harry wrote. The Mail on Sunday said it would fight the suit vigorously, and Thomas Markle, age 75, said he only revealed the contents of the letter after a friend had told People of its existence. The royal couple didn't stop there. On October 4th, court documents confirmed that Harry is taking a separate legal action against the companies that published the tabloids The Sun and The Daily Mirror over alleged interceptions of his cell phone voicemails. "He's looking at a way to protect Meghan, and he's worried about Archie," says a royal insider. "He wants to protect his nest, and this is the only way he could think of doing so." The pair's aggressive moves surprised even palace aides, including those who work for other members of the royal family, with some insiders noting that the timing distracted from the positive work the couple had achieved in South Africa. "This is a separate and private issue that has been willfully introduced and has sabotaged some of the great work they were doing," says historian Robert Lacey. For Harry and Meghan, who are funding the legal actions themselves, there was no choice. "To stand back and do nothing," said Harry, "would be contrary to everything we believe in." There's an inset box here. It says the royals team up for mental health. Meghan and Harry joined forces with Prince William and Princess Kate to jointly narrate a PSA for the Every Mind Matters campaign, released October 7th. Glenn Close and Gillian Anderson appear in the PSA, promoting a program that allows users to create their own tailored mental health plan for free online. The royal couples hope it will have a huge impact, a source says. Miley moves on with a new man. After calling it quits last month with reality star Caitlin Carter, Miley Cyrus is back in the dating game. On October 3rd, the singer, who announced her separation from husband Liam Hemsworth in late August, was spotted out for breakfast with Australian singer Cody Simpson in L.A. "She was sitting on his lap and started kissing him, says a witness. Days later, Simpson, age 22, who previously dated Gigi Hadid, shared video of the couple enjoying a night in. Responding to backlash for moving on so quickly, Cyrus, age 26, defended her right to date. "I was in a committed relationship for almost all of my teens and early 20s, she wrote on Instagram October 4th. "Get used to me dating. This is where I'm at." Here's this week's Heart Monitor. Married at last, Hillary Burton and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. The One Tree Hill actress, age 37, and The Walking Dead actor, age 53, wed on October 5th after more than a decade together. "It was private and magical and everything I dreamed," Burton wrote October 7th on Instagram. She and Morgan, who wore a Joseph Aboud suit, have two children, son Gus, age 9, and daughter George, 19 months. On a break, Kylie Jenner and Travis Scott. The reality star, age 22, and the 28-year-old rapper, who share a daughter Stormy, age 19 months, have decided to put their relationship on pause after more than 2 years together. There is absolutely hope that they will get back together, says a source. New couple, Josh Duhamel and Audra Mari. 2 years after his split with wife Fergie, the actor, age 46, appears to have a new leading lady in his life. He was photographed kissing 25-year-old Miss World America and fellow North Dakota native Mari on October 2nd. And finally, happy anniversary to Barack and Michelle Obama. The former president, age 58, and first lady, age 55, celebrated their 27th wedding anniversary on October 3rd. Like the Beatles said, it's getting better all the time. Barack, dad to daughters Malia, age 21, and Sasha, age 18, with Michelle, tweeted, Beyonce's dad battles breast cancer. When Matthew Knowles noticed a speck of blood on his white t-shirt in July, he didn't think anything of it. My initial reaction was maybe I worked out too hard, says the father of superstar singers Beyonce and Solange. Then I thought maybe it's some kind of reaction to my medication. But as the bleeding persisted, he says, that's when I knew I should go to the doctor. It's lucky he did. Bleeding from the nipple is a symptom of breast cancer, and a mammogram and biopsy showed that he had stage 1A breast cancer. I never imagined this, says Knowles, age 67. Male breast cancer, affecting roughly 1 in 800 men, is at a much lower incident rate than female, says Dr. Doria L. Ashri of the Breast Cancer Research Foundation. After finding out he had a BRCA2 gene mutation, Knowles urged both of his daughters to be tested. BRCA mutations, which can be inherited, increase the risk of breast cancer. Knowles had a mastectomy to remove his right breast in July and plans to have his left breast removed as a preventative measure in January. There's always a risk it will come back, but today I'm cancer-free, he says. It's all about early detection. Jimmy Fallon's funny family. The 45-year-old Tonight Show host, who shares daughters Winnie, age 6, and Frances, age 4, with wife Nancy, age 52, just released his new children's book, This Is Baby. What is your bedtime routine like? It's getting longer and longer and longer. I think right now it's probably a 6-hour process. It starts with bath time, then it goes into book time. As a tired parent, I'm like, 3 books, then we're going to sleep. What a process. Usually I split it with my wife. We're a good team. I'm tired of the same books, but then the kids always bust you if you try to cheat and turn a couple pages at a time. They're like, you skipped a page. You can't get anything past them. Kids are smarter than anyone thinks. They're the most intelligent people on earth. They know everything. So what are they into now? They're obsessed with Aladdin. We watched the new Will Smith movie, but then we had to watch the cartoon again because they wanted to see how it compared. Halloween's going to be all Aladdin. The little one's going to be Prince Ali, and the other one is going to be Jasmine. They have the magic carpet. Forrest Whitaker, an Oscar winner's next chapter. From memorable parts in 1992's The Crying Game and last year's Black Panther to his Oscar win for 2006's The Last King of Scotland, Forrest Whitaker has perfected his portrayal of both villains and gentle giants in his 37 years in Hollywood. Now he's winning rave reviews for his role as real-life 1960s crime boss Bumpy Johnson in Epic's new series, Godfather of Harlem. Whitaker, age 58, was drawn to the project because I thought it was going to throw up a little bit of a mirror on what's going on today, says the soft-spoken actor. the polarization of the country, immigration, profiling, brutality. He's somebody who's trying to succeed during a time when people are being oppressed. Raised in South Central LA and nearby Carson by his teacher mom and insurance salesman dad, Whitaker escaped the tough streets of his own neighborhood by attending high school across town in Pacific Palisades, where he played football and sang in the choir and musicals. He won a football scholarship to Pomona College before a back injury sidelined him, then attended USC to focus on music and drama. After a cameo as a football player in 1982's Fast Times at Ridgemont High, he began landing notable roles in films like 1986's The Color of Money and 1987's Good Morning Vietnam, and he later branched out into directing. Away from the set, Whitaker relishes being a dad to his four adult children with ex-wife Keisha, whom he divorced in 2018 after 22 years of marriage. "I'm most proud that they're caring people," he says of his and Keisha's grown daughters, True and Sonnet, and his son Ocean and Keisha's daughter Autumn, both from previous relationships. "My youngest is about to graduate from college. Two of them sing. One of them just started acting. It makes me happy spending time with them." As for his own future, Whitaker, who next stars in the Netflix musical Jingle Jangle, hopes to eventually step away from both acting and directing. "I want to travel the world, find some modes of relaxation, and just be," he says. "More than anything, Whitaker is grateful just to be alive," he says, "and that I've been constantly shown the capacity people have to do good." And now here's our cover story and the rest of the women changing the world. Oprah, 5 moments that changed my life. A global force for more than 30 years, the star looks back at her pivotal forks in the road and considers how life might have been very different. Few have lived a life more examined than Oprah Winfrey, who has frequently shared her triumphant climb from poor Mississippi schoolgirl to billionaire media mogul during her decades in the public eye. So when she sat down to discuss the pivotal moments of her journey, she was initially faced with a very un-Oprah-like predicament. She wasn't sure she had enough to say. But then came this question. What if she had zigged instead of zagged? What if key moments had gone the other way? "Okay, that's something that reads to me," she says. "The what ifs." Since deciding to sign off from her iconic talk show in 2011, Winfrey has continued to ask herself and her fans bold questions while taking new risks. A year ago, she announced a new multi-layered deal with Apple to create original programming, and in January, she'll embark on the Motivational 2020 Vision Tour. The woman who introduced the aspirational goal of living your best life continues to change lives around the world, including lifting 1,000 girls out of extreme poverty through her Leadership Academy in South Africa, while donating millions to charitable causes ranging from hurricane relief to UNICEF. Reflecting on the paths she didn't take, the 65-year-old guru opens up about the age she never thought she'd live to see, her relationship with her longtime partner, Stedman Graham, and why even now she's still learning. "There's not a moment that can't turn out to be useful later," she says. "Life is a huge classroom, and when you learn one lesson, you get to move on to the next one." Number one, moving from Milwaukee to Nashville as a young teen. Born in Kosciuszko, Mississippi, I'm sure I mispronounced that, to Vernita Lee and Vernon Winfrey, Oprah lived with her mom and 2.5 siblings in an impoverished Milwaukee neighborhood when she was in grade school. Then, as a teen, she was sent to Nashville to live with her father. I used to have this dream that I was going to be dead at 56. So the year that I turned 56, I was filled with dread. I had only told one other person that I had a number in my head when I was going to die, and that was Gail King, her best friend. Gail said, "What's the number?" I said, "I'm not going to tell you because you will drive me crazy, and then I will end up dead." So when I got to 57, it was like, why did all my life I think it was going to be 56? At the time, I started having this vision of 56. It was when I was in Milwaukee, and I was trapped in a world where I could see how dire it was. I'd not gotten out of Milwaukee. Had I not gotten out of Milwaukee, nothing would have been the same. I do believe I would have been dead at 56. I believe I would have been 437 pounds. I believe I would have had diabetes. I would have had high blood pressure. I would have suffocated knowing that things could have been different. For me, the big zag was being sent to live with my father. If that had not happened to me, I would have been one of those people who would forever have been looking through the windows of other people's houses, wondering what's that like. What is that warmth? What is that laughter? What is that feeling of comfort? I feel so deeply for people who are trapped and they know there was once a part of them at 10 or 12 or 15 years old that was smart and vibrant and hopeful. That thing got smothered and overwhelmed. And so because I was just a zig away, I have great empathy, feeling, and compassion for those people. I am always, through all of my work, also speaking to those people who feel like they got left behind, because a lot of people get left behind. Number two, leaping from Baltimore to Chicago and finding a boss willing to take a risk. In 1983, after 7 years at Baltimore's WJZ, Winfrey took a swing at a major market and auditioned to host the local show AM Chicago. I interviewed for AM Chicago on September 3rd, which was Labor Day weekend. That was the only time I could get off, and everybody from that station, WLS, including general manager Dennis Swanson, came in on the holiday to audition me. He told me then I had the job. At the time, the show was airing against Phil Donahue, who was national. I said, "I don't know if I could beat him." Dennis said, "We're not asking you to beat him because we know you can't. We're just asking you to go on the air and be yourself," which was the greatest gift. When they asked, "When can you start?" I said, "Certainly by October 1st. When I went back to Baltimore, my boss says, "Well, your contract isn't up until December, and we're not letting you out." But Dennis Swanson said, "We will wait for you." Suppose he'd said, "Sorry, we have to find a host sooner than that." Number three, deciding not to marry or have children. Winfrey met Stedman Graham, now 68, an author and business consultant, in 1986 at a charity event. After 6 years of dating, the couple announced their engagements. Fans waited and waited for a fantasy wedding that never took place. At one point in Chicago, I had bought an additional apartment because I was thinking, well, if we get married, I'm going to need room for children. Doing the Oprah show allowed me to see the depth of responsibility and sacrifice that is actually required to be a mother. I realized, whoa, I'm talking to a lot of messed up people. And they're messed up because they had mothers and fathers who were not aware of how serious a job that is. I don't have the ability to compartmentalize the way I see other women do. It is why, throughout my years, I've had the highest regard for women who chose to be at home with their kids, because I don't know how you do that all day long. Nobody gives women the credit they deserve. I used to think about this all the time, that I was working these 17-hour days, and so were my producers. And then I go home, and I have my two dogs, and I have Stedman, who's letting me be who I need to be in the world. He's never demanding anything from me, like, where's my breakfast? Where's my dinner? Never any of that, which I believed would have changed had we married. That's why I had not just cold feet. I had 2 feet in a block of cement, because my feeling was, he's a traditional guy, but this is a completely untraditional relationship. If it remained a relationship, I can manage it. If I become the wife, now I've got to play by the rules of whatever that is. And that would not have been pretty. Both he and I now say, if we had married, we would not be together. No question about it. We would not stay married. Because of what that would have meant to him, and what I would have had my own ideas about it. Gil used to say to me, oh God, I think you're going to regret not getting married and having kids when you get older. I have not had one regret about that. I also believe that part of the reason why I don't have regrets is because I got to fill it in the way that was best for me, the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for girls in South Africa. Those girls fill that maternal fold that I perhaps would have had. In fact, they overfill. I'm overflowed with maternal. Number 4, swearing off sensationalist TV in 1989 after 2 pivotal episodes. After just 3 seasons of her talk show, Winfrey took a big chance. She declared she would be producing only shows with inspiring and positive content. In an era when Morton Downey Jr. and Geraldo Rivera brought in big ratings with shock television, it was an enormous risk. I was making the intentional effort to be a good force in people's lives. If I hadn't, I would have been out of television much sooner. It was the KKK skinhead show during which Fikes broke out repeatedly and one guest was kicked out for profanity. And then the show with a man, his wife, and his mistress. At the time, the producers thought this was one of the greatest bookings we could ever get. We thought, he's agreed to come on with his girlfriend? This is unbelievable. Then there was a moment where the man says to his wife, you know what? There's nothing you can do about the affair because my mistress is pregnant. We were live, and I didn't know he was going to tell her, nor did the producers know. It's one of my greatest shames, but a shameful act that followed me, that allowed me to make the shift. Because I go, never again will I do that to somebody. Never is that going to happen on my watch again. When I made the shift away from sensationalism, the ratings dropped at first, and I had affiliates who said, what are you doing? We had said we were going to take the higher road, and the affiliates were saying, even if you're going to do that, don't tell anybody you're going to do it. I had affiliates saying, well, why can't you have Trash Fridays? Why can't you just do it once a week? Then there were a lot of critics accusing me of trying to create the Church of Oprah. This was at a time when there weren't so many voices. Now it's hard for anybody to get heard saying anything meaningful. Somebody needs a curator out there to help you figure out what is and what isn't meaningful. That's what I'm doing for books. Winfrey's wildly successful book club, responsible for launching dozens of bestsellers, is relaunching via Apple. But it's hard to find somebody who doesn't have an agenda and is focused on your best interest and not just their own. Number 5, ending her talk show after 25 years to launch the Oprah Winfrey Network. After 4,561 episodes, Winfrey wrapped her talk show in 2011, only to see her new network, OWN, stumble out of the gate. Winfrey recalibrated and rebuilt the network with a mix of inspirational programming, like Super Soul Sunday, and original series from Tyler Perry and Ava DuVernay. Earlier this year, Winfrey also signed a deal to produce new content for Apple, which will include a docu-series on mental health, co-produced by Prince Harry. The most afraid I've ever been is after leaving The Oprah Show and the struggle with OWN. That's as close as I've come to feeling defeated. Even in the middle of that defeat, I knew that it would pass. I would say, I'm going to admit this is bad right here, but this isn't your whole life. I didn't know how long it would last, but in 2012, I took a beating. Everybody was saying, you should have kept your day job, Oprah. It's over. People were essentially saying, you're canceled. What a mistake. I questioned whether I made the right decision giving up the show. Did I do it the right way? Should I have worked harder at doing a weekly show for ABC? Because that's what I was working on. You know who was the best for me during that time? Stedman. He was saying, you didn't come this far to have your whole life discarded because of a decision to own a network. And whether that works out or doesn't work out, you still have a life. It was also really, really helpful to meet Barry Diller, former Paramount and Fox CEO, who has bought and sold companies. What I learned is that I'm the only one out here internalizing every move, like it's defining who I am. Men are like, invest in that business. If it works, invest more. If it doesn't, move on. Look at how many businesses Barry's had, some more successful than others, and he doesn't define himself by that. Now we've turned it around, and I couldn't be prouder of Greenleaf, Queen Sugar, and the fact that Tyler Perry created the foundation for our scripted programming, saying, I'm going to help you out. But all this started with the show, this community of people who have been impacted, and it still lives with them. It's everything from I changed my bra size, left my husband, went back to school, never hit my kid again, got a colonoscopy, a mammogram, all of it. I think the impact will live far beyond my lifetime because it's not just the viewers, it's what they imparted to their kids and their husbands and partners. For me, it's a great reward. So we've got an inset box here about Oprah's daughters, my greatest joy. In 2000, Winfrey told Nelson Mandela she'd like to one day build a school in South Africa. Mandela fast-tracked that idea, and in 2007, Winfrey, who oversaw every detail from the classrooms to the dorms to the uniforms and personally interviewed the prospective students, opened the Oprah Winfrey Academy, the Oprah Winfrey Leadership Academy for girls. Since then, she's been more than a benefactor, though she has donated more than $200 million. She is Mom O, a support the girls can text or call at any time. The results? In a country where only 20% of students go to college, 90% of OWLAG grads attend universities that have included Harvard and Oxford. The school is my greatest legacy, she says. The girls are my deepest, greatest joy. Another inset box reads, her happiest place. Winfrey's favorite place is her Montecito, California estate, which she calls the Promised Land, including 12 oak trees she refers to as the apostles. I get to live like the queen of my own world, she says. The center of her home is a 1904 painting, To the Highest Bidder, by Harry Roseland, of an enslaved mother on the auction block. I'm surrounded every day by the manifestation of God through nature, but I never want to forget where I come from. And that is all the time we have for today. This has been People Magazine. I'm Jackie Norton for Radio Reading Services.